So I was muted. Okay. Okay, we need to resume the meeting where we were, which was expenditure list, because it all has to be recorded. I am not connected to the cart anymore. So anyway, thank you all. Hang on a second. I need to get reconnected to this cart in order to do the meeting. This isn't working very well. One thing I was going to share with you all is that Patty Walters had made a comment in the chat that it was hard to hear all of us when we were all talking at the same time.
What?
So, what? Okay. That seems impossible, but point taken. We will be careful not to do that. Okay, so now, can... Okay, so now we are connected and recording something.
And there's our tech person.
So we're back. I don't have the chat anymore because this is a second recording. So if there were things you were trying to share with us, Zoom participants, you might re-enter them. And okay, we were at approval of expenditure list. I will.
Okay.
Let you resume that business.
We need a motion to approve the expenditure list as printed on pages 9 and 12.
Okay. Moved and I'll second.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded, and this does not require a voice vote because we're not spending new money. We're just approving the expenditure of, you know, what's been done. So all in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Okay. All right, so the next item on new business is election of officers. This is a very small board, so.
We're probably all officers.
Yeah, what you see is what you get. And
I'd like to make a motion if I could.
Would you like to make a motion, Deborah?
I would like to make a motion to ask Anne to continue as our president for this next year and Georgiana to be our secretary.
A second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Is that all we need, is a president and a secretary?
A president and a secretary. And the secretary is basically the second officer. So if I'm unable to make a meeting, that means you have to run the meeting.
Oh boy.
And if I'm unable, the president has to sign a bunch of documents. So if I'm, you know, prolonged, not available, you'd have to go sign documents.
Okay.
But you do not have to keep minutes because we have Stephanie, who is quite competent, does a fabulous job of keeping minutes. So that odious task of the secretary is not yours.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, any further discussion? Do we need a voice vote for this? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And we agree. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so the election of officers for one more year. Now we've got the UIUC evaluation capacity project proposal, which is included as a decision memorandum, but there was also a second decision memorandum.
No, it's not the decision memorandum is still valid, the attached proposal.
Oh, the proposal. Yeah. The decision memorandum is the same, which is basically to approve it or not to approve it, but the proposal, they changed it a little bit, and that is what you have here.
And that is an addendum to the online version of the board packet. Two, the only differences are it now has the official U of I approval.
There's no change to the bottom line at all.
The bottom line is not changed.
And we do have Mark Aver is here. He's one of the people from the Department of Psychology who's worked on this project from the very beginning. He's online on Zoom. So, you know, I hope we can communicate with him. He's here.
I think it'd be very nice for Kim to have just a little bit of background information on this particular program. So, Mark can do that.
So what I could do, should we try this, Stephanie? Mark, it might backfire because we were having some weird audio before, but if I turn my audio down Stephanie turns hers up, we might be able to hear you. Or maybe, can you talk? And hang on a second. I may be able to turn you up at the source over here.
You want to turn it?
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Yes. Can you hear me in the room here?
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Great. So I'm available to answer questions. I think I heard a request for just a little bit of background. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for having me here today. My name is Mark Aber. I'm, as Lynn said, a professor in the psychology department. Together with my colleague, Nicole Allen, we have been working with the Mental Health Board for 6 years, and now with the DD Board for, this would be our third year coming, to build evaluation capacity in funded programs. And the work is described briefly in the proposal that you have in your packets. It involves, I think the core of it involves working with targeted programs to help them develop goals for evaluation and to support their implementation of those goals. Sometimes that involves, well, it always involves the development of a theory of change logic model. We've been doing in most years, 4 to 6 or so logic model trainings where programs can come and learn how to develop a theory of change logic model, which allows them to map the service activities and outcomes that they expect from those service activities and to try to develop strategies for measuring those outcomes and reporting to their various audiences. So we've been doing this work with targeted partners, usually 3 or 4 of them. In recent years, 5 or 6 of them. Helping them throughout the year, meeting usually on a weekly basis, sometimes a little less frequently, to do this work in a way that would be sustainable by the programs. So that not only do they have information that they can share with their stakeholders, including funders like yourselves, but also that they can use internally to track the progress of their work and to see if what they are trying to accomplish is actually having the intended outcomes that it's expected to have. So this would be our 7th year of this work, our 3rd with the Developmental Disabilities Board. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about the project.
I have a question. This is Georgiana speaking. I'm wondering how the agencies that you work with in a given year are chosen. How do you, certainly you don't work with all the agencies that we fund, but some of them.
We have in every year asked for volunteers. So, one part of this, our approach to this from the very beginning has been rather than it be a top-down process where programs are feeling like the board is looking over their shoulder and demanding or expecting them to participate. We're asking for people and programs to step up who are committed to this kind of work. And then we're trying to build interest in that work by having the programs that participate as targeted partners report to the agency councils at the end of the year about the work they've done. I think that's been successful. So over the years, we've sort of had a word of mouth process whereby programs that have participated have shared their experiences, and that has led to other programs stepping forward to volunteer to participate. Last year it was a little bit slow because of COVID. There were, everybody's schedules and the demands on them were such that we had to beat the bushes a little bit to get programs to step up, but that's the strategy we've taken. We've also done it in consultation with the evaluation committee of the boards, and in conversation with the programs. So if We've had some years where a program said we really want to do it, but this year's not good timing. Can we do it next year? Or, you know, we have needs that we want to have met, but we can't devote the whole year to this. Can we participate via the consultation bank? That's another strategy we use. It's for more short term, more limited engagements where we can work on more narrow sets of goals and projects. So I hope that answers your question, Georgiana.
Yes.
You have a question?
Yeah. I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Do we have any data from the organizations that have been funded about how helpful this has been for them? It seemed like the DD board agencies haven't really been, you know, just for 3 years have been involved in the program. So maybe some of that data about how useful or helpful or sustainable this work is for them is from agencies that are funded through the mental health board. But I was wondering, I didn't see any of that information in the packet. So it helped me understand like how useful is this money that we're spending to the agencies?
It's a great question. We have done a survey, did it last year, of programs that have participated, and we have not been able to finish that report yet, but we're writing that up as you anticipated. That doesn't involve many DD programs. But we have had, you know, by word of mouth at public meetings, the programs that have participated, many of them have, you know, given testimonies to their experiences. They also do that at the, as I mentioned earlier, at the Mental Health and DD Agency Council meetings, share their experiences with us. You know, I think on balance, we have been impressed with both the commitment of the programs, the energy and time that they've put into it, and have believed the reports from them that it has been helpful. But I think it's, you know, it does, there's some variability, obviously. Not all programs find it equally helpful. And it depends partly on this, where the programs are at. One of the big challenges with this work in terms of sustainability is the turnover of staff that, you know, we see in most of your funded programs over the years. You know, it's hard to keep the staff on board for multiple years. And so we're trying to help them build products and processes that can withstand turnover in staff. But the programs that have more stability tend to report higher satisfaction and higher sustainability of the work.
Another question I had was around the targeted evaluation data usage and consultation. Can you give us an example of a program that would kind of enter the evaluation project at that time for what is data usage? So what are some things that these organizations would be doing if they're getting training on data usage?
Thanks. Those partners were partners that had spent an initial year with us as targeted partners building the first steps to have evaluation capacity. So typically that involved, again, the logic modeling and the development, identification of measures, standardized measures, empirically based and supported measures to look at their outcomes. And, you know, it's a time-consuming process. So very often programs in that first year simply build the capacity to collect information and don't get much support or a practice at putting that information into a format that is shareable with others and even consumable by their own program. And so some of the activities, to get finally to your question, that we do in that next year is to help them develop smart strategies for analyzing the data. So teaching them how to use Excel and other similar kinds of software programs that will let them summarize data across clients and over time, to look at relationships between, say, symptom counts and amount of time in service, those kinds of things, you know, looking at basic inferential statistical ways to analyze the data. We had a data workshop scheduled for today, which unfortunately we just had to cancel because our speaker is sick, but we will reschedule it. That is focused on Excel and how to use pivot charts and other aspects of Excel to do data analysis. And then we also coach them through communicating those findings in the way of graphic presentations of the data and through reports.
We have two agency representatives who are willing to speak on this when you're ready.
I just, one last thing, just to, the reason I asked that is one thing I would, I don't know if this is part of the work that you would be doing, but making sure the data usage and communication is both in, you know, the normal way you would do it, but also in plain language so that recipients of these programs have accessible access to the information and understand the data that is being presented to them, I think would be a key part of that. So I didn't see that in the proposal, but if that could be something you all could work with the agencies, which the agencies are experts in that, and maybe you're already doing it and I missed it.
To be honest, we have not done that exactly with any of the programs yet, but that's certainly something we could do. And if it's something that emerges from the program's own goals for their data usage, we would certainly support it. We can suggest it. We will suggest it. That's part of what we're trying to do is make the data accessible and interpretable.
Okay. We have two agency representatives. Can I see? Is it
Sarah Perry?
Sarah Perry, would you like to speak?
Sure. So we worked with the U of I group and went through both layers, and we actually collaborated on our safety inspection form for community living program for our apartment inspections. And it was very, very helpful. We currently had just a checklist and it was pass fail, but there wasn't any numerals, no real percentage to reflect. So our pass fail wasn't, really wasn't substantiated. So we worked with the representative and came out with a beautiful form that has percentages, and we could truly state if the individual passed or failed the inspection. We could track the data, show improvement month to month. And it is a form that is now being utilized across the entire program, and we are able to save the data and, look back and utilize it to see how the individual improved, did not improve, and we use that for our program goal. And so that was a remarkable experience to get a useful tool to actually be able to collect relevant data that made sense.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
Rebecca, did you want to say something?
Sure, yes. Hi, I'm Becca with Community Choices. We've actually had the chance to work with the evaluation team twice. Our initial time was, it was a number of years ago, and we worked with them to develop a satisfaction survey for kind of the organization involvement overall, as well as kind of targeted for each of our programs. And kind of to your question about sort of the accessibility of data, one of the things that we actually spent a lot of time working on in that project was making sure that the survey that we did was accessible and did use like simple English as well as like visual cues so that somebody who maybe didn't have a strong reading level was able to complete it either independently or more independently and just kind of having some visual representations of both what the question was about as well as the rating scale. And that is something that we've carried over from that initial partnership with them into a lot of the other evaluations that we've used just internally, both for like classes and kind of different iterations of that survey that we've kind of tweaked over time. And then last year, we worked with them also in our community living department to develop some new ways of tracking the data that we collect in terms of our sort of annual planning process with people. we do a number of different assessments, and so we spent a lot of time figuring out better ways to kind of record and track that data. And again, kind of to Mark's point, we didn't, you know, for kind of a number of reasons that our program there is, we're working on some kind of updates and kind of new aspects to it. So we haven't been able to put all of that into practice yet, as well as just last year was probably not the year to start doing some of that, just because the nature of our services was a little bit different because of COVID. But we found all of our partnerships, as well as just kind of ask the consultation, make things here and there, to be very, very helpful. So we've definitely had some good experiences with them.
Okay, thank you very much. Georgiana, did you want to say something?
No. I don't think so. I mean, I have lots of questions, but right now I can't hone down on any one of them.
All right. So we have not put the motion on the table, and I think we're ready for that.
I'll move to accept the U of I capacity building evaluation year 7 proposal and authorize Solomon to enter into a contract with them. Total cost of $83,625, with the DDB share being $35,000.
Second. Any further discussion? Now, this does involve money, so we have to have a roll call vote. Stephanie?
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter? Kim Wallowick Fisher?
Yes.
Deb Rouge?
Yes.
Anne Rowe?
Yes. Okay, so the motion is approved. All right, going back to the agenda. Thank you for that discussion. I think that was very substantive. And Mark, thank you for your overview. And thank you to Rebecca and Sarah for your comments. And we will look forward to hearing more.
You're welcome.
Item C is setting the stage for fiscal year 2023. This is information only. And I would suggest that we postpone discussion of that for right now.
Would you be all right with folks just following up with me between the next meeting? Might be too late. Because we will have to have these arguments done. So, is that okay?
Absolutely. Do people want to discuss item C right now, pages 23 to 45? I didn't mean to stop discussion if people want to have a discussion right now.
Because it's really repeating back to things that you already have and adding last year, the team, the evaluation capacity team, worked with us to design a logic model. So the page 28 and 29 are two different versions of the same logic model, which is really to represent the work that the DD board and the Mount board both put together. So we have, that's kind of a nice thing for our strategic planning, is stuff with the logic model. There are a lot of things that we have to do to satisfy the statute and also as a public entity that, you know, maybe sort of like they're only related to the mission by accountability and transparency and compliance with the law, but they're important to us for those reasons. And then the next section is the short, the community-friendly version of the regional health plan. This, you have a paper copy of it as well, but that's also attached.
Is that the same thing as this beautiful color brochure that we got?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have an online version. We have a photocopied version, which is black and white. Lovely. And then we have this beautiful color brochure that you can look at and see. And I think, Kim, this may relate to some of your comments about accessibility of data in a readable form. I haven't really memorized this, but I looked at it and it looks pretty readable to me.
But it is the iPad for Champaign County. So what we did this time around, it's different from what we had done in the past, is everyone in Vermilion and Champaign counties who has an obligation to do a community needs assessment for health, behavioral health, and DD, you know, and a strategic plan, did it together. So they did the needs assessment, you know, the survey in the worst possible time ever in history to try to do one, which was last year in March, right? Like that was the focus of their survey type. So we're doing some of those activities again right now, taking advantage of the relatively more open time. And the lady who led this work on behalf of iPlan is helping us, Chandra Bishop, she's helping us. And so maybe for her, it's nice to be able to do some of these activities in a less locked down world. But one of the folks who helped us design the survey is actually the lady who wrote the letter to the editor, Sarah.
Yeah.
We have a little advisory group for developing the survey and for finding some themes. And Sarah DeMissi, if that's how you say, is one of the members of that group. So it's nice to see her. Anyway, so these are just documents that you either have or should have had or completed or something new proposed in here. It's really just to kind of show you where we're at right now, what the priorities look like this year. We did change some of the priorities. There are more of them than there used to be, but we were going towards simpler language and maybe more categories that were more tangible, like work, non-work. You know, just we really need to work on our our language access. And so it was one step toward it.
So often when I look at an application, I look at the priority that they've chosen, and I'm like, well, really, it would kind of fit over. There's so much overlap.
Yeah.
It seems like in our priorities where they would fit in more under more than one. Maybe there's a way to broaden that somewhat so that they can pick more than one priority. I don't know. But sometimes I think, oh, that application almost looks like it would fit better under this.
And I'm under priority of linkage and coordination. It seems to me like there's three agencies that get involved and have programs that provide linkage and coordination. And I thought that was sort of redundant about maybe why are there three agencies that provide linkage and coordination?
Look at young children and their families priority, and I see that I think there must be a typo there because it says something about Zilla expansion, CCMHV commitment under that, at the bottom of page 25. There's two organizations, two programs, but.
Well, this Zilla expansion is just included there because we use the amount of money, the $50,000, to meet their technical obligation to the DD. They prepaid it. So yeah, you're right. It has nothing to do with young children, but it's listed there as part of the collaboration. Maybe I should express that. Thank you.
So I didn't see in any of the priorities any, I might have missed it. Like community participation, technology access and use. I mean, I know that in the community health plan, community engagement is one of the areas of focus, but if you don't have anything related to supporting people's access to technology, their use of technology, the DSPs that work or direct support workers, their use of technology, that's not, and you cannot participate in society if you have no
access to technology.
Right. So that when we talk about spending on broadband, I feel like, you know, this community really needs to be part of that conversation. And then I know that workforce development was part of this community health improvement plan, but it's not in any of our, I didn't see it as part of like workforce issues is any part of our priorities and brand new. So I don't know if that's an appropriate place to put it.
Well, it is in the priorities document. It's one of the things that we ask
think it's a REMS, but it is not a SOMA specific priority.
So I mean, are we considering changing these priorities or rewriting them for the next 3 years?
Well, we rewrite the priorities every year. And then we write a new strategic plan every 3 years, but new objectives every year. So all of these ideas are very helpful to me. And if you continue to have thoughts about this, let me know. It
seems like workforce development, which we talk about frequently. Yes. You know, development, sustainability, it's a huge issue. And it's a kind of an overarching. Don't we have that kind of listed in our documentation as an overarching consideration? But you're right, Kim, it really needs to be probably spelled out in bold. Large font over and over and over and over again in everything because it's such a huge issue.
So we have a problem with those two, with both of those priorities, which are missing because they are very important. But both of our attorneys told me we can't do some of the things that we have been exploring in those areas. That doesn't mean we can't do anything. It just means we can't purchase equipment for individuals. We did that through the mini grant, and it appears the statute support that, and I should never ask lawyers questions, but you know, they read the statute very strictly and compare with counties who do. They said that maybe don't do that, and also some of our ideas for workforce development are also not things that we could do with this fund. But that doesn't mean that and the agencies may be able to do some things that we can't directly do. So putting those in as priorities, especially given what we've learned in the last 2 years. Like that seems fair. It is, workforce has been in our priorities document for about 10 years. It's a very large section and we do ask everyone to address it.
You're talking about the statute that creates the DD board. Okay. That it doesn't include purchasing of equipment or support for workforce development, some of the activities.
Some of the things that we've come up with So that doesn't mean that's a done discussion. It just means we haven't come up with the right things yet. But meanwhile, the university got a couple of $1 billion to do workforce development through social work. So we could be in a very sweet position in a few years with regard to workforce. I'm not sure. But so anyway, those are absolutely areas that we will continue to address. Just some of the specific ways that we wanted to address it, we've been hit a wall. If agencies were doing it, might be different. So, like agencies can do specific assistance for clients, and really, you're right. The technology use and access is such a huge issue right now. The county has a broadband task force that's starting to understand not just the federal opportunity, but Illinois, state of Illinois opportunities. We should be part of that. Or people with DD should be represented.
Okay, no, I think this
just
is
one other
important discussion.
The health survey. So, like the people that were surveyed, 89% of them were white and 83% were women. So, and when you look at like on page 40, they said like 61% in terms of neighborhood safety concerns, 61% of them said the highest was traffic speeds. And I just think like, that is that really representative of the community at large of what really is a neighborhood safety concern? So so help me understand this better. So were we doing this survey?
Well, this was done by the public health department with this collaboration, and it was done early in 2020. So it's possible, even though most of the respondents were white women, I'm not sure what the N is. It tells me that the people most likely to participate in the survey very well could be white women, but also in March of 2020, they might not have been thinking about some of the neighborhood safety issues that are right in front of us right now, especially white women who might not live in the neighborhoods most affected by community violence. So if that's what you think, I do. So we are about to do a survey that's specific to mental health, addiction, and DV. And in our focus group, the one thing people really wanted to talk about, and these are self-advocates, that our staff found and brought together, they all wanted to talk about community violence. So I think we will have that in our home community needs assessment that's related more specifically to these.
Is there an outreach plan from your focus group, from your, you know, an outreach plan to really, really get the word to the communities most affected by violence, to get, you know, community members more engaged?
It's been, you know, the last time we did a survey was 2018. We pushed it so hard, and we got about, Kim Bowdry could speak to this. She's there and she's looking, and maybe we should put her on the big screen because she's more involved with the plan for outreach, but our return rate was very low last time. We spent a lot of money and put out paper copies and emails, and we had a whole website where people could go to take the survey that they felt most moved to take. They could be surveyed as a person with a developmental disability or as a person who just cares about those issues. Like, we had 8 different options, and the return rate was especially low for D. So Kim, are you in a position to speak to this? Like, what we're gonna do next? Because you've been exploring technical options and you know, always with an eye to the best value, but anyway, you ready?
Yeah, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so we are exploring maybe an option of giving those completing the survey some kind of a gift card or a small, I guess, reward for completing our survey. We are trying to figure out if that is something that we can actually do. And so one of the questions on at the very end of the survey that we are considering is, if you would like to be giving something for your time and effort, you know, please include either your email address or your mailing address. And we're hoping, like, if there's something in it just besides, like, you know, public duty, then maybe we will get a larger return rate. The last time that we did it, I made paper copies and worked with all of the group home providers and their staff to get those distributed so that people living in the group homes could take the opportunity to complete the survey. But I do think we will have it online again, and then a paper copies for anyone who desires to do it that way, and then we can just enter those manually. And we've talked about, like, us actually going out into the places where there might be people who are hard to reach, who we typically wouldn't hear from. You know, it remains to be seen whether those people will talk to us, because they don't, you know, they have no relationship to us. They don't know us. So we might not get a better return rate than we did last time. But, you know, we are trying to get it out there more, and we are trying to hear from more people, and especially those that are affected most by the you know, services that we fund.
So our experience in 2018 with that very low return rate also included, like, some really great quotes from people who took advantage of the open-ended, the one comment space. We were using those quotes in the priorities memos for the last 3 years because, I mean, they were very informative. So this survey has a lot more open-ended questions than the last one. And before we even started working with the focus group, we got some advice from our colleagues at the Community Data Clinic at U of I, who had just to work on an app for improved access to transportation for residents of housing authority settings, they narrowed their work down to 100 questions. And, you know, just to get to what they needed. And in order to get responses, they paid people. And so she says to me, like, you're not going to pay people? If you don't pay people, they're not going to do the survey. So, you know, we've been trying to figure that out. Like, how do we do that? Gift cards, food, like, we don't budget for it. We could certainly find a way to do that. But if that's going to help our return rate, we're going to do something.
I think that's a good thing for us to consider, because you aren't going to get
responses as much unless there is an incentive associated.
How was this, who was surveyed in this survey?
They rely on focus groups. They used the process that they do every 3 years for developing the I-plan, but they had to do it right when everyone kind of went into the shelter in place and, you know, the lowest amount of interpersonal access ever. So, and they had to stick with the timeline and just rough it out. So they were doing focus groups, but that means like probably, you know, people who had adequate technology and could use the technology and phone conversations. I think that's part of why this survey is so unsatisfying, and they are very unsatisfied too. But I think we also have, you know, we won't have access to the census data until September, so it may not make it in time for us to use in our you know, big picture stuff. But we're also hearing the census data are really problematic this time around for the same reasons, accomplished during a pandemic with, you know, with funding through Department of Human Services instead of another, you know, just a really odd approach to census data. So this suffers. I don't know specifically how they went about it, but they have been concerned about it.
I remember answering this, but I think I was requested to by Somerville, right?
Probably.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is good discussion.
Thank you very much.
I think we are ready. I'm sorry, I tried to cut that off. I think that was very, very useful discussion. item D, we are at past an hour because we had some technical difficulties. SILA facilities project, and this is going to be discussed at length next week, July 28th. So that's just for your information. And I think we're ready for successes and other agency information. Do we have people that would like to spend a few minutes talking about their successes? Anybody here?
So for folks on the Zoom, oh, Becca has her hand up, do it.
Sorry, I lost my like raise hand function somehow on the screen. I wanted to share, obviously you guys have seen some of the work that Sarah Demasay has been doing, including her letter to the editor and being involved in tons of focus groups and things all over the state. So she is just an absolute rock star when it comes to self-advocacy, and it's been just an absolute pleasure to be witness to it. One of the things that I did want to share, one of Sarah's many things that she does is help to facilitate our human rights and advocacy group that we do here. And it's a group of self-advocates, as well as some community members who work on different projects related to issues that are important to them and are important to the community. So in the last, 4 to 6 months, I would say, the group has been trying to address issues in terms of affordable housing. And so a lot of them are people who have actually experienced receiving a voucher and then going out to look for an apartment and finding that landlords are very unwilling to rent to people who do have, you know, any type of subsidized housing. And this is a well-known issue to the Housing Authority and many other sources. And so they chose to address this by developing some resources that they could give to other people that they knew, other individuals who receive vouchers as they're kind of going about their housing search. So they basically created a pamphlet that just talks about some of the benefits and the process that people or that landlords can use to rent to people with vouchers. So kind of a little sort of give some quick facts about it, some next steps. It has some quotes from area landlords who have accepted vouchers, as well as some people who have used vouchers and that have obviously had those subsidies make a big impact on their lives. So they are just completing that. So we have kind of a draft version of it, but they are very excited to begin sharing that with folks in the community, other people at Community Choices, and certainly I'm sure it would be helpful for other people all over the community. It's not specific to people with disabilities, although we all know that many folks with disabilities do have a really difficult time accessing affordable housing, so it could be particularly helpful for them. So as soon as we get that kind of finalized, we'll certainly be happy to share it with anybody who is interested.
Thank
and then
you.
Also, I'll just say too, you know, we are getting ready to expand our community living program, and I just thought I would let the board know that we are, we should be able to offer those positions to people by the end of the month. So we'll certainly let everyone know too when that is all finalized as well, but it's going along quite, you know, just on schedule.
Great. Anybody else? Well, thank you for that. And we'll look forward to hearing from other people in future meetings. Now we're to old business. And item A is deferred funding request. And Lynn and I discussed this at length a couple of days ago. And I actually wrote a decision memorandum, which I don't have a copy of.
Oh, okay. You emailed it.
I emailed it to you and I didn't print it out and I don't have a copy of it.
And I had made a suggestion.
So basically this has to do with Piatt County's request for money to purchase a van, which they would use to transport Champaign County residents to Piatt County day programming. There were some real positives on this, giving people more choice about what program they would be going to, because as Lennon has pointed out, a lot of people have very little choice about what program they can go to, if any choice. So this gives people more choice. There are some Champaign County residents who are well matched with the Piatt County Day Program and are doing well there. And transportation is a real issue. So this is addressing an identified need. The concerns that we have, I actually put in the memorandum.
You did. I can't open the document.
You cannot open it.
Because it's an attachment to an email. And
well, darn. I thought I did such a good
it
job
was
sending
great.
It to you.
It was really good.
Even though I sent it late yesterday.
I wonder if I have it.
And I didn't, I could have printed it out. I have a printer.
Yeah, I don't have it here.
I'd just like to, if I could just say that I really think that there's some value in this program. Certainly, I know that there's a can of worms regarding Medicaid supplementation, so what we fill on, but I'd still like to find a way to make this work. And I thought it was especially interesting getting down to the spot, your last paragraph in your requested input, that directly giving funds for the purpose of transportation for these Champaign County residents, as is done by the Ford County Mental Health Board for Ford County residents served by DSC.
That's right.
Pretty much says it all to me.
I would
that if there's a way that another county is doing this using public funds, mental health funds to support this endeavor, I think we should figure out a way to do it.
I'm going to get my other computer because I believe I can download.
Well, yeah, I do. I could probably recreate it.
Okay.
Because I wrote it late yesterday, so I was kind of organizing my thoughts. And basically, I said that this was a decision memorandum to support providing the funding, and the amount is about $51,000. So
it's about what?
$51,000. So we could say $51,000 to be provided by the Champaign County DD Board to Piatt County for the purposes of supporting transportation for Champaign County residents to Piatt County programs. But I had some contingencies that would need to be addressed. The first contingency is that Piatt County DD Board has to create a Champaign County Advisory Council, which they say they can do. So they could need a couple of people that say this is serving Champaign County needs. And then we would have to have information, and it's actually in paragraph 3 on page 224. So if you look here,
Kim says it's 61. Oh. I'm sorry.
61,000? Okay. Well, it was in two different amounts, and that was confusing to me too. Why don't they just put it all together and make it easy?
Okay. So that's one condition.
Okay. Yeah. So that we would need to satisfy the answers to the questions about level of services and preferences for those being served. And I would add how many people are being served. So the number of people and what their level of service and their preferences are, what their specific funding type is, and constraints on the agency's contracts with the state. It says states, but really state. And this is a legal point, whether there's a risk of supplementation of Medicaid, because there is some money in Medicaid for transportation. So we need to satisfy the legal requirement as to whether we are allowed to do this.
Okay.
And we've gotten some advice from the Developmental Disabilities Department of the state of Illinois saying that yes, we could do this.
So the conditions are, they create a Champaign County Advisory Council. They put this all together in one application for 61,000. And they define level of services and numbers served and specific funding and constraints on contracts, with the state.
I would also be interested in how they can maybe increase capacity. This would help them, especially since there seems to be so much interest from the people in Mahomet. From what is, did I read that in here? That they've had a lot of inquiries from Champaign County residents who live in Mahomet, which is, you know, closer to Monticello than we are. And, you know, so if we're going to give you this money, who else can you serve? You know, so, how many more?
So they need to avoid the risk of supplementation. We have some contract language that would help us, please. The CEDA board is protected from that risk. I don't know if we can do more than this.
Yeah.
And then they would have to address, how would you like to say, increased capacity plan?
Just a plan for, yes.
Mm-hmm. So if that is your direction to us, we could request that from Piatt and bring you back another decision.
So this is basically, this decision memorandum is basically authorizing Lynn and her staff to discuss this further with Piatt County, with the idea that the board is sympathetic to the need and interested in helping them. And we need to get these questions answered in order to say, yes, we will get them. So I put that in the decision memorandum.
It was perfect.
Yeah, so what I did.
Because Lynn and I said, it's so hard to come up with these things in the meeting.
Yeah. Do we know is Ford County Mental Health, are they just ignoring the sticky Medicaid supplementation thing, or are they just going off with Director Stark's seemingly like just go ahead and do it?
And don't tell me
too many questions. Don't tell.
Yeah.
I'm gonna send this to Stephanie and maybe she can. So our experience with Illinois, this is my soapbox that can go on and on and on and on. But you know, in all of the states where the Medicaid administrator is a separate agency from the licensing agency, so that's the case here. HFS is the Medicaid administrator, DHS is the licensing agency. There is misunderstanding about that particular part of Medicaid, from the CMS perspective, it's, you know, they could come in and find that this is illegal, right? But it's just, it's true in all the states that do it this way, and Illinois has been doing it this way for so long, that DHS literally writes in their brochures to agencies, you will need to raise money from third parties in order to make these rates work. Which is, yeah.
So it's going to find that the two words Medicaid supplementation hang like a little cloud over just about everything that we do try to do.
And so then to make it more challenging, about 3 years ago, a federal judge found Illinois out of compliance with its large Olmstead case, the Ligas concept. We have several Olmstead cases, but the Ligas is most concerned with community residential settings for people with DD, out of compliance, and now it's 3 years out of compliance, specifically because the rates are too low. So now we have, okay, now we have an ethical problem. You know, we're out, states out of compliance with this consent decree because of the low rates. So now, how do we not supplement morally? So, and we don't have good answers to these questions.
And sometimes you just have to take the information that you have available and use it in the best way with the idea that your best intent, understanding that somebody somewhere is going to object to it no matter what you do. So,
and I guess the risk is a loss of system. Yeah.
So can we make a brief that the board authorizes Lynn and her staff to engage in further discussions with Piatt County
for those specific conditions?
Yes.
Regarding this.
So we're not authorizing the money right now today. We're authorizing Lynn to engage in further discussions with the view of coming back with a decision memorandum for our consideration at a future meeting, sooner rather than later. Is that okay?
We have something that we can need. Do we need to vote on that?
Or
so I think you just read it in the minutes. We need a second.
Second.
Further discussion? Now this is not authorizing the expenditure of funds, so we can just say up or down. All in favor? So we've authorized Lynn and staff to engage in further discussions. Is that helpful for you?
Very helpful. Okay. Thank you.
So the sense of the board is that we think this is a useful request. We would like to participate in it. We just need more information. Okay. All right. So that pretty much takes care of the action items. We've got 211 data summaries, schedules. Bring to your attention that next week we're having an extra meeting. CCMHB input, anything?
Okay. Same stuff as this week.
Staff reports, again, thank you to staff for your excellent reports. Board announcements. Welcome to Kim, and thank you for your participation today. So I think we're ready to go into the closed session. And I would say to our participants that there will be no further business after this closed session. So thank you for being here.
So now after you make the motion, or after someone makes the motion and seconded and voted on, I pause this recording and do a voice note.
Okay.
We found those to be easier to see.
We need a motion to go into closed session.
I make a motion to go into closed session.
I second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so we will go into closed session for the purpose of reviewing and approving the draft minutes of a closed session meeting, which I was disinvited from, so I was not there.
I wasn't there either. We are returning to open session. And
I need to do a roll call again, okay?
Omar.
Georgiana Schuster?
Here.
Kim Wallowick-Fisher?
Here.
Deb Rouge?
Here.
Anne Robin?
Yes.
Okay, now I would entertain a motion to keep the closed session minutes from the meeting February 19th.
Wait, could we do it again? Because for some reason this was muted, even though I had unmuted.
Do what again?
Return us to open session. The recording failed to grab us.
Deb Rouge?
Here.
Georgiana Schuster?
Here.
Kim Wallowick-Fisher?
Here.
Anne Robin?
Here.
Are we recording? Okay. All right. Can I hear a motion to keep the closed session minutes from February 19 to 20? No, 26. What is it?
There's two.
Two sets of minutes. The closed session minutes closed, please.
Looking for a motion to
keep them
closed.
Yes.
I'll move that the closed session minutes from two meetings, one that occurred February 19th, 2020, and one that occurred February 26th, 2020, remain closed.
We will second that motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. So they're still closed. So if you would please give your copy back to Glenn for destruction. Okay. And I think we are adjourned. Okay. Well, good job. I think this was very substantive discussion. Kim, thank you very much for your comments and questions. Much appreciated. And
thank you, Anne, for agreeing to continue on to present. Great job.
Well, it's real different not being on Zoom, you know? I mean, we kind of got used to the Zoom thing, and it worked pretty well.
Miss it.
Yeah.
I thought we should all wear pajamas here.
Yes, very appropriate.
And no shoes.
And no shoes. Well,
we might be going back to Zoom. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? All right, well, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.